I'm back, and we got what you just were listening to was Jimmy Smith and Wes Montgomery together, and before that we were listening to Marvin Gaye, Distant Lover, and before that Lee Morgan, the Memorial album. So what I'm going to do, like I promised you earlier, we're going to play some West African djembe music. The same music that when the warriors die in Africa, the music that they play in the villages so their soul will go on. That's what I'm going to play right now for Jimmy Smith, because he was a warrior. So, again, what you just heard and what you're hearing in the background is Jimmy Smith and Wes Montgomery together. But what I'm going to put on now, I'm going to put on the African drumming, and then I'm going to go into nothing but... We're going to listen to nothing but Jimmy Smith for like the next 20 minutes after the African drumming. So again, this is Kill Radio. Remember, Kill Radio just might save your life. It's the day after Valentine's Day 2005 here in Los Angeles on a beautiful chilly night. Let's see. Okay, yeah. Thanks for listening. This is Hassan on Straight Ahead Jazz. Thank you.
Thank you. can't get no satisfaction from you, baby.
Kill Radio. And yeah, that was actually Jimmy Smith singing. I love to hear Jimmy Smith sing. He growls. This is a real 60s album. Right in the background, Jimmy Smith doing 1, 2, 3. And before that, we were listening to I Can't Get No Satisfaction. And before that, High Heel Sneakers. And the name of the album is The Incredible Jimmy Smith Got My Mojo Working. So this is Kill Radio, killradio.org. Our phone number is 213-252-0998. Oh yeah, and before this album, we were listening to that little piece of music I was telling you guys about it, that some friends of mine made here in Los Angeles. Well, they've produced a lot of music, but that particular piece that I played was called Sofa, and it's a It's music from Guinea off the coast of West Africa. It's what they play when their warriors have died and they're passing on to another life. And one of the members in the group told me to play this tonight. Play Sofa for Jimmy Smith because he was a warrior. Whenever you're an artist in America, you're a warrior. So, let's see. And before... Oh yeah, and the name of the group is called Drums of Passion, and the leader is a good friend of mine named Rasan, and his son Khalil, who I play with sometime. I'm not on that album, but I'll play. Well, I'll back him up sometime. So let's see. Again, this is killradio.org. This show's called Straight Ahead, every Monday night at midnight. And this is Jimmy Smith in the background. We're going to go back into a little Jimmy. But the thing is, I'm not going to be able to play him as long as I wanted to because it's already 1:30. And I want to play some of this James Brown interview. I might even try and play all of it. Okay, so let's go back into Jimmy Smith. The incredible Jimmy Smith, who I actually met one time in the middle 70s. He used to have a jazz club out here in Los Angeles in the middle 70s. Called Jimmy Smith Supper Club. It was out in North Hollywood. Him and his wife ran it. Great food. I went there with my uncle, and I couldn't believe we met Johnny Hartman, the great singer. Johnny Hartman just happened to be in the audience that night. That was a great treat for me. And I got to meet Jimmy Smith and all these people. Oh, that was, yeah, a long time ago. So let's go back to this album. The incredible Jimmy Smith got my mojo working.
Well, I tried in New York City.
tried on you. Oh yeah, I got my mojo working, baby, and I'm gonna try it on you. Oh, Rugalita, I'm got my mojo working, baby. Yeah, I'm gonna try it on you. Well, I tried in New York City. Oh, no, I'm gonna try it on you. Oh, yeah, I'm gonna work my room. Oh, my mojo. I'ma work my Google just on it. York City. Oh, you gonna give me a chance on you. Oh, yeah. By my boogie lady hat. Oh, oh, lady Marcy. Oh, 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 yeah. Boogie lady working on you, baby. Oh, yeah. I got my goose dust on. Working now. This is my goal, baby. Oh, yeah. Regaloodle. Rugalator. Mojo, mojo. Macho, 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 macho.
Good. Along with James Brown, we'll also meet his wife, Tommy Ray. She's a singer in his band. Although I always introduce our guests, I think there's someone who can introduce James Brown a lot better than I can.
So now, ladies and gentlemen, it is start time. Are you ready for start time? Thank you, and thank you very kindly. It is indeed a great pleasure to present to you at this particular time, national and international known as the hardest working man in show business, man is saying, I'll go crazy. Try me. You've got the power. Think. If you want me, I don't mind. Bewildered. $1 million seller, lost someone. The very latest release, Night Train. Let's everybody shout and shimmy. Mr. Dynamite, the amazing Mr. Please Please himself, the star of the show, James Brown and the Famous Flame.
James Brown, Tommy Ray Brown, welcome to Fresh Air. James Brown, I want to start with your first record recorded in 1956, Please Please Please.
Right.
Now, I understand this record almost didn't get released. Your new book says that the owner of King Records, Sid Nathan, didn't want you to release this. What didn't he like about Please, Please, Please?
Well, it was repetition because I continued to say please, please, please. And he heard me say please, please 26 times. And didn't ever, you know, had that kind of concept or that kind of music. It was like gospel ballad, you know, and he couldn't understand the pulsating bam, 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 please, please, please. He couldn't understand that. But that was a new horizon coming by him, totally different from what he did before.
Well, I guess they made a mistake. So
I'm glad they did.
Yeah. So let's hear your first single, Please, Please, Please.
Please, 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 please. Did me wrong. Well,
It's James Brown, recorded in 1956. He has a new memoir. It's called I Feel Good. Now, we've all heard your MC introduce you over the years. Why did you want an MC to introduce you in this fantastic way?
Well, because it's dramatic, it dramatizes a lot, and it's a build-up what show business should be about. Show business should really be a build-up, and then once you go into it, you like live it. But it should be a great fanfare and a production, and that gets to the people, the chords, different kind of way you say it. The same as a minister would do in a church, or a coach would do to his team. You have to have a way of getting started, and that's probably the best way that I know of, with a dramatic introduction.
Did you tell him what to say?
Yes.
And one of the things your MC has always done is, like, put on your cape, take off your cape. Why did you want to wear a cape?
The cape is because I saw a rascal by the name of Gorgeous George. And Gorgeous George was a flamboyant wrestler, and he wore curls in his hair at that time, and he was really sharp and really different, a little early for most people. You expect him to win if he didn't win. So it was kind of a thing where he was a great wrestler, so it made great for his production. It made him quite... Gorgeous George reminded me a lot of Hulk Hogan.
The wrestler, yeah. Now, have you always had your clothes made for you?
Most of the time I design them. I started wearing red suits years ago, and they thought we were crazy. But we wanted people to say, there he is, not where he is. And the same thing applied to the famous fans, which they were working with me, right, Tommy?
That's right.
And I do the same thing with Tommy Ray right now. I make sure her clothes are designed different. A lot of times she don't agree with me, but that unique way and that individual look is very important. It's the same thing I have right now.
My guest is James Brown, and he has a new memoir called I Feel Good. Speaking of I Feel Good, I want to play I Got You, I Feel Good, one of your most famous songs. You have two versions of this. The first one you didn't release. You weren't happy with it. This was in 1964. What was wrong with the original version? What made you think it's not ready yet? It's not right yet?
You got to get it where it syncs with the people or where they're at, you know. I Feel Good was cut first with a jazz concept because I have a broad... and a great, more of ability to do more than one kind of music, or hear one kind of thing. There are so many directions that I go in, you know. So what I did, I went back, and about 4 o'clock in the morning, I called my band leader at that time, his name was Nat Jones. I recorded I Feel Good in Chicago, and it was too sharp, too slick. Had a baritone, you know, and the syncopation was so sharp. So I had to cut something. It was like, I feel good. Da 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 da. We call that staccato, because it hits right on all the points. Din dun dun dun. And the drum. So what we did, we wanted to get more of a funk feeling, a sanctified feeling, so we changed it and slowed it down. Ow! I feel good. Dun, 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 dun. Then that's two different kind of things. See? That's one is jazz because sharp mixes, and the other one kind of laid back, and gave you a little rock and roll feeling at that time as well. We went with the laid back cut because that fit the street and fit the dances. A good thing I could dance because by being able to dance, I could really tell that the new arrangement, the new concept I had for it, really fell right in place.
What was the difference between the dancing you could do with the second version compared to the first?
Well, you could do the street dances. The first verse was, you might even do ballroom and everything with it, but the second verse was strictly for get down from the street.
Right.
And we need street action. That's what's basically wrong with the music today. A lot of it don't go street.
Okay, well, let's hear both of these versions back to back. The unreleased and the released versions of James Brown, I Got You, I Feel Good.
Well, you'll notice that the unreleased has a baritone in it,
mm-hmm.
with a heavy sound. And the other one don't have the baritone, but you'll see the difference.
Let's hear it.
Oh, I feel good. I knew that I would not. I feel good. I knew that I would not.
Two versions of James Brown's I Got You, I Feel Good. He has a new memoir, which is also called I Feel Good. Mr. Brown, the way you start that record with your, if I do it, I'll sound ludicrous, but, you know, the ow at the very beginning. It's so great. Can you talk a little bit about how you started doing that?
Well, the screaming and stuff come, I must admit one thing about it, a lot of the screaming, it was during that time when Little Richard was real big and Roy Brown, people like that. The screaming kind of came down the line, but Little Richard is really responsible for more screaming than I am because he used to do that, whoo, all that stuff years ago, and he was more or less into it. He was sanctified, and I was holy, but I wasn't sanctified, you know, so we, kind of just borrowed things from a lot of each other, but Little Richard was very instrumental in a lot of the screaming.
My guests are James Brown and his wife, Tommy Ray. Brown has a new memoir called I Feel Good. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air.
Air Talk with Larry Mantle celebrates 20 years of excellence. On Saturday, February 5th, join 89.3 KPCC and Larry Mantle for Family Day at the Aquarium of the Pacific in Long Beach. You and your family can spend the day discovering the aquarium and stop by to meet Larry and his family. Aquarium of the Pacific is offering KPCC listeners complimentary admission for up to 2 children with 1 paid adult, sponsored in part by Southern California Edison. For more information, call
626. Okay, everybody, Kill Radio. I hate those commercials. Let's see if it's back up yet.
Brown has a new autobiography called I Feel Good. Well, shortly after you recorded I Got You, you recorded Papa's Got a Brand New Bag. And I want to quote something that you say in your new memoir, I Feel Good. You say, Papa's Got a Brand New Bag changed everything again for me and my music. I didn't need melody to make music. That was, to me, old-fashioned and out of step. I now realized I could compose and sing a song that used one chord or two at the most. How did you start reducing your songs to being more about rhythm than about melody?
What I did with that, I brought a lot of my songs has melody, but like I Feel Good, that's melody, all that stuff. But rhythm, all the way through the song. And I was listening to, even rock and roll stuff had melody, you know. But I went with more of a jazz concept gospel situation, I was talking to Tommy, and Tommy Ray, she have her rock and roll stuff has melody, but then all of a sudden after she married me, she started to get in the Holy Ghost, and she didn't know it. While she was going over and over, she sang with the Swanee Quintet. See, we, you know, coming from the black community, you have a lot of Holy Ghost, you know, and a lot of gospel. And Tommy Ray got over to me and started doing the Holy Ghost thing, so the melody it don't really fit when you get in the music they got today.
Now, at about this time, your beat really starts shifting from the 2 and the 4 to the 1 and the 3. Can you talk a little bit about that shift?
Started,
yeah, go ahead.
It started that with Papa's Bag.
Right.
From that point on, it was 1 and 3. And even before I Feel Good, Papa's Bag had the 1 and 3.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Can you maybe just clap for us the difference?
Well, one is laid back, and you know, it's like, down, ding, down, bum. The one that has syncopation. I mean, that's the difference. And you count it off, you right on the one, bam, boom, bang, bang. And then the other one, you say one and a two, and you'd be on a two, see, but with two is the upbeat, and I'm on the downbeat. That's the difference.
How did you start doing that?
Well, because of the fact that I'm a musician, I sung gospel as well, and I know the difference. It's not how. It was easy to do. Why would be the best thing. Why gave me a different feeling.
And was it hard to convince the musicians that this would work, or did they get it right away?
No, I paid them. And they played with it. And they played what I wanted, and that was it, because they would have never agreed.
They would have never agreed to it?
They would have never agreed.
Why not?
Well, because it was in their head that Mozart, Schubert, Beethoven, Strauss, Bach, Chopin, was correct. And they used to tell me that I was wrong. So they thought that was a law in music. There's no law in music. There's a freedom in music. That's the reason why Tommy Ray and them sing rock and roll, right, Tommy?
That's right.
You get tired of being bedded down to one thing. Mm-hmm. So you start singing what you feel.
Well, why don't we hear Papa's Got a Brand New Bag, which you recorded in 1965. It's James Brown, recorded in 1965. He's my guest, and he has a new memoir called I Feel Good. And we'll be talking more with his wife, Tommy Ray Brown, in a couple of minutes. Now, some of the musicians in your band became famous in their own right later on. Maceo Parker, Fred Wesley, Bootsy Collins. And, you know, I interviewed Bootsy Collins a few years ago, and one of the things he said, I mean, he loved playing in your band, but one of the things he said is that it was hard for him to be so disciplined. It was around 1970, the era when you were recording Sex Machine, and he said, you know, everyone was freaking out, but we were standing up there being the tightest band in the land, having to wear suits and patent leather shoes, and you couldn't jump out in the audience and freak out and act crazy, and that's what we wanted to do. Did you know that someone like, say, Bootsy Collins really wanted to, like, be wild and crazy, and you wanted this really tight, disciplined band?
Well, I taught them organization. They didn't have organization. And discipline is very important. You wouldn't take, you know, I wanted them where they could play at West Point as well as play in the street on the corner. I mean, West Point, a Navy Academy place. I wanted them to be able to go anywhere. And see, when I went to play Papa's Bag and stuff like that, I could play for the president, then I'd go and play for the people in the street. That's what you call being totally accepted and being totally straight about what you felt.
Can you describe what your rehearsals were like in, say, the 1960s or early 70s?
Well, I'll tell you, my rehearsals has always been very intense. But, you know, for somebody who works with me, and somebody who's not just my wife, but also my employer, my artist. Would you explain that, how you feel in rehearsal time?
Well, first of all, it's an honor to be in a rehearsal room with you, but when he walks into the rehearsal room, he commands performance, and because of the respect in the room for him, people command themselves to perform for him, and he knows every note. If you're off a note, I don't care if 25 musicians are playing, he will find the bad note and who played it at what time. He has got an ear that... Even the person that played the bad note doesn't even know they played it.
Wait, I'm going to stop you right there. When he hears it, excuse me for 1 second, but when he hears the bad note, what does he do about it? I mean,
oh, he stops and he says, you did this, or whatever, you know, he'll do with his voice, he'll make the sounds, you know, and you're supposed to go, and it'll be so, even just this little minute difference, but he will hear it and know it. And he sings it to them through his mouth and explains to them how to play it, because he's not educated as far as writing music. He created the music. So he doesn't look at a piece of at sheet music. It comes from God, you know. So he explains it with his mouth, and it's very interesting to see. And everybody listens, and then we get it, you know. And then we start up and do it until it's right, and we don't leave until it's done.
Is it ever embarrassing to be singled out that way?
Well, you know, it's it puts you on the hot seat, and when you first start, yeah, you get embarrassed, and you might even be foolish and make a fool of yourself because you're trying to stick up for something that, what are you sticking up for? You got the Godfather soul telling you how it's done. And instead of being grateful and just listening and doing what you're told to do, sometimes we think we know more than we do, and, you know, we need to look at who's teaching us here and really be thankful for that. But
Thank you. Excuse me for saying that. And then I can always go to the keyboard or to the guitar, to the bass, or to the drums, or I can hum it out and whatever, but I can show you the note on five or six different instruments because I play most of those instruments well enough to describe what I'm about.
And play most of them better than they do.
Now, do you ever find musicians? I know you used to find musicians, didn't you?
Oh, yes. I'll do it now, but, you know, the musicians now, they have a lot more respect, and they're more intense on doing right. Wouldn't you say, Turner?
Yeah, it's been 8 years now of learning, and every day still I learn more about how to respect and how to really be quiet and listen and learn the James Brown way, and it's a different way. It's unorthodox. It doesn't make sense. It's not scripted. You can't write it down. It's not musical terms. I read music, and it just doesn't happen that way. Fred Wesley, I think, said it best, that it's just, he doesn't know where it comes from. He doesn't know where it comes from, but it's just, it can't be written on paper, and Fred Wesley was right. It's just James Brown.
So, Mr. Brown, what are some of the things you find musicians for back in the day?
Oh, a lot of major things. I did a total program, like a West Point. They got to be clean, neat, the shirt got to be pressed, shoes got to be shine, the suit got to be pressed, they got to play correct. They can't be looking off when they should be watching me, because then they miss something. I find them, because I don't have time to disturb what I'm doing. I mean, we're always going to get through it, but by the same token, those people would rather not get fined, so they have a little bit more discipline. And that's an everything.